Greetings, you beautiful humans. This is Glenn Klein Online. It's hump day, Wednesday, October 24th, 2007. The only October 24th, 2007 in humanity's history. Welcome in on this Wednesday night edition of Glenn Klein Online. Back ensconced in the official Glenn Klein Online studios, able to see the very handsome and talented Patrick L. Jones in person. Patty looking very, very sharp tonight, and also sounding very sharp, coming to us live and direct from Houston, Texas, is the Moses of the Gospel Revolution. And for those of you who read the email today, you know from whence I refer. Mr. What, Michael Williams. Michael?
Yes?
How are you?
I am splendiferous today.
That's awesome. You're in Houston right now, getting ready for your trips north next month in Calgary, and also in Wisconsin right after Calgary.
Yes, I am. I'm doing quite a bit of traveling. Also going down to Corpus Christi.
Oh, that's right.
Yes.
Why don't you tell us about that little get together?
Well, I'm going down with Pastor John. And we are attending a UR meeting, some of which the guys, you know, like to have the name of Universal Reconciliation or Ultimate Reconciliation, whichever one. And so I'm just going to kind of be there. A lot of the guys, excuse me while I turn this off, a lot of the guys are have been very much helped by the website and by the teaching, so I'm just going to be in attendance there.
Well, I think there's a little bit of humility involved in that description, that some of the guys have been helped a little bit. We euphemistically and humorously, of course, refer to you as Moses, but as somebody asked a question last week while I was still in Wisconsin, has there been somebody that has taught this gospel since the Apostle Paul before yourself? And the question was addressed to me.
Yes.
And I answered the question, no, nobody has taught the gospel this way, even before or during the time of the Apostle Paul. Because we have the Apostle Paul, we have the benefit of the Apostle Paul's writing. And anybody that has that we know of that is now proclaiming a redemption for the world through the blood of Christ, it's my opinion, it's my humble opinion, that it's like, you know, 6 degrees of separation. You could absolutely positively trace it back to your understanding beginning about 15 years ago. And kind of like how the ex-gay movement can trace its roots back to you in the early 70s, coming out and saying, I was homosexual, God delivered me from homosexuality, and now I'm not gay anymore, even though you always were. And now we have thousands of these ex-gay ministers. Thanks a lot, Michael. We've got
to take the bitter with the sweet.
I know. It's just, you know, it's just your influence in the earth. We've got thousands of these ex-gay ministries all over the planet saying that they can be pre-programmed or reprogrammed from being a gay person or a lesbian or a transgender person into a straight heterosexual. And this is I don't know if you've heard this, Michael, but this has totally run over into the presidential race in the United States. Did you hear about this?
Yes, I was just listening to that. Oh my goodness, I can't remember the guy's last name. I've heard of him before, but he is one of the more prominent quote ex-gay.
Yes, this is Donnie McClurkin.
Yes, McClurkin. McClurkin,
yeah.
Or something, I don't know.
So this, so what it is I was going to say Osama bin Laden, but then I would be like Mitt Romney. But no, it was Barack Obama. He is including an openly former gay minister, and this is part of his concert tour, Obama's, called Embrace the Change Concert Tour. In a letter, in a letter to Senator Obama, obtained the National Black Justice Coalition complains that Obama's concert is being headlined by gospel music's most openly homophobic artist, the most volatile of which is the Reverend Donnie McClurkin. And this is from the letter from the National Black Justice Coalition. Your willingness to share a stage with Reverend Donnie McClurkin is alarming and frankly deeply disappointing. Reverend McClurkin has consistently disparaged gay men and lesbians, spread half-truths and unproven theories about our lives, and has shown a willingness to work with those who would use the rights of gay Americans as a wedge issue to divide black families for their own cynical political objectives. This is from the NBJC Chief Executive Officer, H. Alexander Robinson. The fact that Reverend McClurkin uses his religious beliefs to justify bigotry and discrimination is so damaging that it cannot be addressed with a simple media statement, no matter how heartfelt or sincere. So here's this guy. He was gay. Says that God delivered him, Michael. And this comes from the Human Rights Campaign, Joe Solomonese, who says there is no gospel in Donnie McClurkin's message for gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender people and their allies. That message that certainly doesn't that's a message that certainly doesn't belong on a presidential scale. So we could agree with that statement for sure. There is no gospel in saying that the reason that I want it to be delivered from homosexuality is because God does not approve of it.
Yes, or that, you know, that they were going to hell because of it. I mean, that's the it's not just a lack of approval. Because, you know, lack of approval could fall in a lot of categories that Christians certainly do condone, such as divorce or drinking or a lot of things that churches are filled with. But for some reason, this battle line has been drawn here. I was watching the news this evening, and my friend Wayne Besson, who was actually on was debating. Wayne knows his stuff. He's a good Jewish man, and I met him down in Fort Lauderdale in 2005, and we had a really great conversation. And he, you know, really wanted to know where I was coming from. And, you know, he's followed the ex-gay ministries around the country and has exposed them pretty much all that I know of, all that have risen to the top, and he's followed them into gay bars and porn shops all around the country. And they really don't like him. They were really slamming him really hard, you know. And but he really stood his own. He did a good job. And so they were accusing Wayne Besson of flying in the face of the latest and greatest of the facts about homosexuality in a published work of professional scholarly credentials that proved that homosexuality was not something that someone could not change from. And then of course Wayne came back and he cited the fact that it was that in-depth, knowledgeable study was produced by Pat Robertson's university. And so it was really quite comical. I mean, it's amazing the smoke and mirrors that gets thrown up. But, you know, the thing that I am just really grateful for is it's not being, you know, a gay man or a straight man or any of those things. I'm just grateful to not only be a redeemed man outside of my works, my performance, my abilities as a human, or my ability to believe, but that everyone around me, including those who would condemn me and others around this planet, to know that they too are redeemed is the most powerful thing, Glenn, that's ever happened in my life. And I know Barack Obama is stuck in the middle of this, and I think it's a good place to get stuck. I've been stuck before myself and not known what to do, but you know, it's not a bad place to be. I'm very much a proponent of Barack. I heard him speak in 2004 and have followed his political career since then, since I heard him with about 75 other people in our little town there, Olney, Illinois. And So, you know, it's, you know, he's going to have to do something with this. It's been a definitely something that's been dropped on him, and the gay community certainly is not going to tolerate the support or the promoting. It's not just the support, but he's promoting a very bigoted man, and a man who is not truthful, a man who has taken a position that I know personally is not truthful. And it's not one that is in the best interest of anyone. A lot of people think, well, it's in someone's best interest. You know, well, what if those who want to change, you know, what if you just allow them to? Well, you know, it's like saying to black folks, you know, that, well, to those that want to change to being white, you know, it's why stand up and say there's anything wrong with that? Well, Michael Jackson is the first thing we could say that there's something very wrong with that, and it don't work.
Let you just as you started this conversation, you mentioned other categories of sinful behavior, like drinking or divorce, that the church would allow for now, and not be up on their high horse like they used to be. About those, why do you think that homosexuality is such an issue, and that's the one where they've drawn the line in the sand, so to speak? There's no way that they would allow somebody who is openly gay to come into an evangelical church and embrace them like they do with divorced couples. Most recently,
well,
of course.
Glenn, they've drawn the line in the sand with every issue, and they've had to collapse under the weight of just godly graciousness. And they collapsed, you know, they drew the line under segregation and believing that the blacks were only three-quarter human. They drew the line in the sand where women were concerned. No one ever believed that the church would ever work past the women issue, which the Baptists still haven't. I mean, they still won't allow a woman to be in there. And the women that participate in that church, I think it's just a shame that they are participating even. But, you know, they're good wives back and they're good husbands, you know, who are the spiritual heads and they don't have sense enough to do anything but, you know, be in the kitchen or have a second income for the family. And I know that that's kind of harsh, but my gosh, I mean, these women are supporting the abuse of other women, because the doctrine of the Baptist Church is all about the abuse of women. And I know that that's not what people talk about, but when you begin to segregate a portion of society, that portion of society, especially in a spiritual way, that portion of society falls victim to abuse in the most hideous way. And it has been, that is proven true. I mean, when the church drew the line on blacks and their acceptance into the church community, it led to violence. It led to the greatest atrocities. When the church drew the line on women's rights, it has led to such atrocities. The abuse of children. The church has stood on the wrong side of so many of these issues, it's not even funny. And for women to attend churches that do not recognize the equality of women, I believe they're betraying every other woman around the face of this earth. They're betraying the women in Afghanistan that are being abused by those thugs. It's no different than the thugs that run the Baptist church. And they are condoning. They stand thinking that they are different while they sit and sing in their churches, while they are made subject to the rule and the authority of men in the church, and that they cannot pastor. They cannot stand in the positions that men do, and shame on them for allowing that to happen to themselves and to condone it around the world. They are the supporters of the abusers of women around the world. And now here we stand with this gay issue. And yes, they are responsible. Those noble, noble ones who stand and decree the horrors of homosexuality, yes, they are responsible for the death of Matthew Shepard, who hung, beaten half to death, and then hung on a fence rail out in the middle of Wyoming and left to die after 2 days, 2 to 3 days, just hanging there. And they separate themselves from that. But I'm sorry, I won't let them separate themselves from that. The Christian community is as responsible for every gay bashing that ever takes place as there is anyone, because it's the church that's supposed to stand up for the standards and the rights of human beings, not the standards of a false religion that that gives itself definition through morality, and which only leads to the absolute abuse of those human beings. And even as in Hitler's time, I mean, that when Hitler said that Jews were separate and less than, that's when the abuse started. And it just didn't just come from the SS and from Hitler. It came from other people around them, that they were abused by them and tormented and tortured and starved. It wasn't just by Hitler's Germany, but it was by those who embraced that type of thinking. And that type of thinking, Glenn, above all things, is the type of thinking that is burning in my soul to break through these horrible, detestable, ugly, unrelenting doctrines that are not doctrines of compassion and love, but they are doctrines of hatred. They are doctrines of bigotry. They are doctrines that would subjugate other people into slavery and into abuses of all kinds. Yes, these people may have done it outside the church, but they had the church's endorsement from the doors of its pulpits all the way to the inner sanctum. While the pastors were having sex and the priests were having sex with boys, the very ones of their doctrines were giving breath and life to these abusers to go out and abuse black people and women and homosexuals and whoever. It's been a long line and a long history, and it's not something that anybody has to shrink from in voicing an opinion about, because it is a long, long history that the church has had in advocating the abuse of the less fortunate in our society who happens to not be condoned by the church, while those who have committed murder and who have molested children have gone unpunished because the church protects them. I see something wrong with this.
Yeah, and it's obviously the Third Reich and Nazism was only able to be perpetrated because the churches in Europe, the Roman Catholic Church, the Lutheran Church, as an institution, obviously there were individuals within those churches that stood up to it, but the institutions and the societies that they supported stood mum to what was happening, not only to Jewish people.
Oh, it was more than mum. It was more than mum.
Yeah, they participated.
There was not one person in the SS, not one person in Hitler's army, which 50% of his SS was known to be Roman Catholic, not one of them was defrocked by the church or excommunicated by the church.
Including
the
Hitler.
Only one who was in the SS who was was forced out of the church was because he married a Protestant, and that's the only one of the that's the history of the Catholic Church's relationship with the SS. They never once, not one, you are not going to find it on record, they never once excommunicated someone in Hitler's Third Reich, nor of the SS. But when one of them married a Protestant, they excommunicated them.
Well, you know, the church leaders today would say that the acceptance of divorce, the acceptance of pornography, the acceptance of homosexuality is another sign that we're in the end times. And it seems like right now, always, of course, there's discussion about the last days and Armageddon and the end of the end of the age. But even our emails reflect this, and we wanted to talk about it tonight. This is Glenn Klein online. We're talking with Michael Williams of the Gospel Revolution. You can participate in this webcast by giving us a call on the Glenn Klein online toll-free hotline at 1-800-436-3260. That's 1-800-436-3260. We got this email last week from Bruce Gosey down there in Kentucky, actually up there in Kentucky. And Greg sent us, or rather Bruce sent us, a website. And you can read it, ladies and gentlemen. I'm not going to go into it. It talks very in depth about what he calls the author John Utley, Americans Armageddonites, America's Armageddonites. And you can find the entire article at the website antiwar.com. That's just antiwar.com. And he pegs it. I mean, he's got it 100% right as far as what's happening, and the literal lobbying group that has been formed, and they estimate 20 million people in this country believing in Armageddon is at hand, believing that the rapture of the church and just the end of days is right around the corner. Michael, even just in the last few days, with these horrible fires in California, people are pointing to that as a sign of the end of days, the end of time. And it's a bad fire, but my God, I mean, it's just how many fires have we had since Jesus was on the earth, and here we are still.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and, you know, and as Jesus said in the famous and infamous chapter, as the church has turned it into an infamous chapter of Matthew chapter 24, one of the most blessed chapters in the entire Gospels, of explaining in detail the end of a period of time that was about to take place, has been the most bastardized chapter in the entire Bible, and has led to 51 now, count them, 51 generations of suffering on the face of planet Earth, and hopelessness, and the ability to manipulate and control people around this planet by bringing this totally out of context, no contextual purpose to it at all, except for the purpose of manipulation and control. It's probably one of the most deliberately misinterpreted chapters that I know of in the Bible. I mean, it almost has to be almost deliberately mistranslated because of the definition and the words that take place in that chapter. But that really is what is taken so unbearingly out of context.
Well, let's get into the context as we go through these questions, because we've got a lot of email questions about this particular topic tonight. And as we go along, folks, you will hear what the end of the world actually was and why this is bordering on the insane, what we're getting today. And this comes from Greg Amberge in Ohio. He says, Glenn and Mike, I am particularly disgusted by the end times message because of it, of the effect it had on me personally. One of my earliest childhood memories was a horrific feeling that I had been left behind by the rapture, and my mother had been raptured. I was about 6 years old and got separated from her in a mall. I was told I would never live to be old enough to marry or have kids. I would never go to college. There was no reason to save money. I would not need it. The rapture was imminent. You would have to call me a supporter of Israel, but that support is based on a geopolitical concern and democratic ideals. Amen, Gregory. He says, I have a few uncomfortable questions for end-time evangelicals. If their version of end-time prophecy is truly God's plan, why do evangelicals think that the United States or anyone else can do anything to thwart it? Israel has a relatively high population of non-Jews. In order to occupy the land as promised in the Old Testament, would not the Israelis have to cleanse Israel of all non-Jews? By the way, ladies and gentlemen, myself being a 100% Jewish person, as far as I know, my parents are Jewish, my grandparents are Jewish, my great-grandparents are Jewish, their parents were Jewish, but I don't know back. You talk about 51 generations, I don't know back six generations, Michael. We don't know who are actually Jews and who are not. We know who people who claim to be Jews, and thank God for us. Somebody has to.
Somebody has to admit it.
Exactly. He says, in the end times, Israel has never fully occupied all the land promised to them. In fact, they do not even control the site of their own temple. Oops. I hope pointed that out, he says, does not give the evangelicals an excuse to start, restart the clock on the generations that will not pass away till all things be fulfilled. When the temple is rebuilt and animal sacrifices are offered, will God honor them? I asked this to a preacher friend who emphatically said yes. My response to him was that he had no basic understanding of the sacrifice of Jesus on the cross. He says, I have 100 more questions like these. Please help put an end to this madness. I am seeing John Hagee everywhere. His acceptance as mainstream is frightening. And that's our brother Greg from Kings Mills, Ohio. If John Hagee's on the screen, you're going to see him everywhere because that is one wide boy right there. But, I just saw him the other night on CNN, Michael, and Glenn Beck, who was interviewing him, who's got his own religious mishigas. You know that term mishigas? It's a good Jewish term. His own religious craziness as a Mormon. He was just enthralled with Hagee's end time. I mean, Hagee was just preaching it right down the line. And the irony, of course, was this was on the heels of Hagee having a night to support Israel when his church over there, the Cornerstone Church in San Antonio, not a heck of a long way from where you are right now, ends up giving $8 million to pro-Israel organizations trying to bring back as many Jewish people to the land as possible because they think that's a necessary factor for the coming of the Lord, the second coming, the rapture, Armageddon. Now, what Hagee doesn't tell his Jewish friends is that what's going to end up happening, according to him, is that the Antichrist is going to come and is going to end up killing two-thirds of the Jews, and the only ones that are saved are going to go take to the hills to a place called Petra in Jordan. I've been there. I mean, it ain't that hard to find. I mean, we think we've had a hard time finding Osama bin Laden. This place is not hard to find. We know where it is. It's on the tour map, for God's sakes.
And Jews are just smarter than that, you know, to go to some place on the tour map.
Exactly. So, I mean, it's absolutely insane. But here he is, and here Hagee is. He said, Michael, on the show, I saw it. He said that we're at the most 20 years out from this happening. He said that the Antichrist is alive and well on the earth. And I'm thinking, Glenn Beck asked him, how long do we have to go? And he said 20 years. So I'm looking at this guy. He's got to be well in his 60s, maybe 70, right? So he's thinking, you know, he's a big fat guy. He's thinking, you know, there's no way I'm going to last 20 years. What the hell is the difference to me? So it just like Greg said, it is maddening that this guy is, and he just wrote a book called In Support of Israel, which once again he will make millions of dollars from. Jewish people who have no clue about the gospel will flock to him because they're looking for support anywhere they can get it. And it's really crazy out there.
It's very crazy, and, you know, at some point, you know, history itself is going to wash all of this through, but immediate history is not. In fact, it is playing into the hands of the numb-witted notions that have been proven wrong so many times. You know, Glenn, it might give itself some credence if Hagee, as an end-time preacher, or Jack and Roxella, or any of them, had been right one single time. But, you know, I don't get it. I mean, this is not the first rehearsal we've gone through for the rapture or for the end of the world. I've been through several of them since I first came into the church scene, even as a child. And my gosh, we've been through so many rehearsals for the rapture. I remember even standing in church and that's going through a rapture rehearsal and jumping up in the air and practicing for the time when we would jump in the air and we wouldn't come back down.
Wait. Literally?
Literally. Rapture practice.
You were doing jumping jacks for the rapture?
We had rapture practice. And I remember it very clearly. But, you know, the thing of it is that all of this really is comical except for the part, like the heart of our friend there in Ohio crying out to say, I have been abused by this doctrine. Well, not only he has been abused by this doctrine, but my gosh, Glenn, I've had one of the greatest successes of my ministry on the planet Earth has been reaching into the hearts and minds of teenagers who are suffering at the time. One of my greatest stories of my entire ministry is of a young man who was 14 years old in Canada. And he went to visit his friends. His friends happened to be coming to my meeting. He came and sat in a 45-minute session where I taught along these lines. And then a year later, I was holding a conference again, and this man, this young man who was now 15 or 16 years old, came back with his father, who met me in the hallway after I'd already done several sessions. It was a week-long conference in Canada. I can't remember exactly where now. But his father approached me in the hallway of the convention hall where I was speaking, and he pulled me off to the side and he tried to speak and he choked up. He tried to talk and he would say a few words and it was just almost impossible. He finally was able to compose himself and he explained the story. He said, Mike, he said a little over a year ago, he said, my son came to one of your meetings, and I didn't remember the kid at all. He was just somebody else in the meetings. But he explained the story to me. He said, before he came to your meeting, he said, my son, we raised him in a strong, good Christian home, thinking that that was the very best we had to offer him. And he was taught about the end times and the second coming and the end of the world, and we thought that this was the healthiest thing that we could do for our son. And they said that we had no clue what was going on in his heart and mind, but he had gotten to the point to where he was not sleeping through the night. He was walking the floors, wringing his hands, and developing psychotic behavior. And this father told me personally that if they had known that he was coming to a Mike Williams conference when he went to visit his friends, he admitted to me, I would have forbidden him to go. He said, but I'm glad that I did not know, because he went to your conference and he said, Mr. Williams, after my son sitting in one session for 45 minutes to an hour, one single session, came back to us at our home, he never wrung his hands again. His psychotic behavior disappeared almost overnight and went back to sleeping peacefully because he found out that the end of the world had already taken place and that there was no imminent end to the planet coming in one 45-minute session. Now, folks, let me tell you something. Knowing the truth is supposed to set you free. If that crap was truth, it would not be doing to people like what happened to our friend who just wrote in, nor to this young Canadian boy. It would set them free from these things. Truth does not lead you into a mental institution.
Yes.
Truth makes your heart and mind clear. It may not lead you into the perfect life of health and wealth and prosperity, but it will help you mentally and emotionally to deal with the life that you do have. But the one thing that the truth never does is lead you into a mental institution and rob you of life and rob you of a future. I remember at the end of our conference, we had passed around the microphone and given everybody the opportunity to say anything they wanted. You know, you're a heretic, or we love you, or you're the greatest thing since sliced bread, whatever. We don't try to control those things. And we passed the mic around to everybody. And then this young man at the end of that, who, was, as I said, was 15 or 16 at this time, and we were asking everybody, what did you get out of this conference? And he spoke up, and it finally came around to him. He's quite a shy fellow at the time. And he said, The number one thing that I get out of all of this is that I have a future. And he passed the mic on. At which point, I just almost collapsed in tears. I thought, what an incredible thing that with such simplicity, and great boldness, and I do speak with great boldness. Paul said that because of this grace that has been given to us, we speak very boldly about these things. We don't try to figure things out. We don't have every answer on the planet for everybody's problems. But my God, we do have the answers that give you stability to deal with your problems. At least you don't have to go around wondering when the next moment that your parents aren't going to be in their bedroom, and maybe you've done something wrong and you're going to miss the rapture or the end of the world is coming, and why should you go to college, and why should you try to better yourself because the end of the world is coming. This is abuse, Glenn.
Yeah.
This is not just a spiritual doctrine. It is abuse of the utmost form. It is gross. The preaching of the end of the world is gross. Can I say that as clearly as I can? It's gross.
Yeah, it's more than gross. It is...
It's ungodly. It has no element of truth in it at all.
It's obscene.
And the hurdles that the church has had to jump over to get to the bastardized version of the end of the world is unbelievable. It's absolutely unbelievable because it's very clear. There's nothing that you have to be a scholar about. There's nothing that you have to go to school to find out. I'm a high school dropout, for God's sake. I mean, I'm not somebody that is a trained professional in any area or vocation, but I was pulverized as a youth by these things, and it sent me on a search, and I wanted to know the truth more than I wanted anything. And the things that I share have simply come from what an everyday person, Glenn, can study these things out and find these things out for themselves.
All right, we're going to talk about what actually is in the Bible momentarily, but we got this question, and I think this dovetails nicely into where our conversation is right now. This comes from Pep Washburn, who, by the by, is going to be hosting Michael in central Wisconsin in Marshfield, in the middle of the next month. And as always, folks, as an aside, go to the gospelrevolution.com website for all the information about Michael's meetings and also for opportunities to have Michael come into your area. But Pep wants to know, Mike, is that why is it that the evangelical church succumbs so easily to this discredited scenario of this prophecy game? That's what it is. It's a dangerous game, but it's a prophecy for profit game.
Yes, and discredited also, as Pep said. It's been so horribly and so blatantly discredited.
Why do we get sucked in so easily by it?
Well, I think number one, there's money in it. Not for us as individuals, but there's certainly money in it. Man, I tell you what, you start telling somebody the end of the world's coming. I mean, every one of these creatures, I won't call them preachers, every one of these creatures who stand up and start teaching this detestable doctrine then takes up offerings. It's like, what the hell are you doing? If the world's coming to an end and they don't need the money, why do you need the money?
And you know what they do after having a message like this? They go out to eat. They go out to Shoney's.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
Hagee goes three times.
They're not going out to the streets to say repent for the kingdom of God is near. They're going out and stuffing their faces after this. What kind of madness is this?
Well, it's madness to the nth degree.
I'll tell you what.
There's no justification for it. You know, if there was a heart that followed this up and a commitment to it, it would be almost something you ought to stop and take notice to. You know, at least the guys that are out carrying the sign who have come through and been in mental institutions and don't bathe or shower or take care of themselves or eat with a billboard hanging around their neck, the end is near, at least those guys are committed to it. Why don't we go listen to them? But instead, we're listening to these rosy-cheeked fellows who stuff themselves behind pulpits and threaten the world with its end, when none of their prophecies have ever been true. It's been 2,000 years, 51. We are in now, Glenn, the 51st generation since Jesus stood and said, this generation shall not pass until all is fulfilled.
All right.
51 generations.
So we discovered that Jesus, who was actually, of course, not named Jesus, that was their first mistake, was embracing the pagan and the Greek religious roots of this thing to begin with. But that's an aside. Here's the Lord, Joshua, Yeshua, Jesus, if you will. He says, Michael, this generation shall not pass away till all these things be fulfilled. Now we know where this doctrine took a major foothold with the rapture and the 70th week of Daniel and all this crapola that has come down the pike, the time of Jacob's trouble. It started with a guy named John Darby in the 1800s and made its way into the evangelical Christian world in a major, major way, obviously, to the point where guys like John Hagee and Tim LaHaye and Jack Van Impe and Roxella and Lindsay, what the hell, Lindsay, they made literally tens of millions of dollars with this dreck. And so, but he wasn't talking about a generation in the future, was he, Michael? How much clearer could he have been? This generation shall not pass away. And the very things that he predicted and he prophesied to that generation, the generation that saw the cross, the generation that saw eventually the destruction of the temple and of Jerusalem, and those Jewish believers who did hightail it to Petra, because that's what he told them to do, and if they would endure till the end, they would be saved. You know what? They weren't slaughtered by the Romans and the other military forces that were with Rome at the time to put down the rebellion in Jerusalem. That generation did not pass away, Michael, till all those things were fulfilled, did they?
No, and those very same people that he spoke those words to and said, this generation shall not pass until all is fulfilled, that very same generation and some of those exact same people were with him one day, and they were hanging out outside of the magnificent temples of Jerusalem. And certainly history and the Bible describes them to us in a way that we probably still haven't seen anything quite so magnificent as those were. And and these were his disciples, that generation he was talking to, and those same people. And they come out of these temples telling Jesus, look at these magnificent temples. And he's telling him how marvelous they are. And he turned around and he says, you know what? He says, I'm not really impressed because this is all coming to an end. And then the disciples said, please tell us when the end shall come. Now, the term world is used there, but the word world has three different definitions in the New Testament. The term world here happens to be the term aeon, and it simply means a period of time, and specifically a Jewish period of time. Isn't that ironic that that word means a Jewish period of time when the disciples were asking, why are you saying that all of these beautiful temples are going to, this is all going to come to an end? This is where they do sacrifices. This is where they do ceremony. This is where all of the Jewish feast days and all of those things are held. You're saying this is coming to an end, and they ask him, please tell us when this is all going to come to an end. Do you actually think, just think of the absurdity. These guys were talking about buildings in Jerusalem, and suddenly they want to know when the planet is going to end? They're just trying, Glenn, they're trying to get their mind around that these magnificent temples are not going to be in existence anymore.
I mean, it wasn't just the temple and the surrounding buildings and the orifices. It was the entire Jewish religion they were talking about.
Absolutely, and they knew it. Because the Jews understood if those buildings have any danger of coming to an end, it's the end of Judaism as they knew it.
And like you said, they not only couldn't they get their mind around that, they certainly were not trying to get their mind around the fact that the whole planet was going to cease to exist. They couldn't even get their mind around the fact that the ritualistic tradition at that time of animal sacrifices was about to come to an end. But it did, didn't it? It happened, yeah. Didn't it?
It did happen, and it ended not in 70 A.D. It ended when the veil was rent in the temple from bottom to top when Jesus died on the cross and the Mount of Olives split in two. And yes, your tapes on Golgotha's Secret is on their way now. And a tremendous insight that you're going to enjoy in those.
CDs.
You can now order them, actually. Let me get in a little plug here.
CDs.
You can actually order them now, and we can get them out to you. But this is what happened. And then Jesus went on to tell them what was not a sign of the end of the Jewish age. Please, anybody, go look at this for yourself. Jesus was not talking about the end of the planet. He was talking about the end of the Jewish order of things, the end of sacrifices and ceremony in relationship pertaining to God. And it came to an end at the cross.
Right, and if there was any doubt in anybody's mind that it ended at the cross, within that generation, just like he said, that saw the cross, that saw the resurrection, that saw the ascension, if there was any question in anybody's mind, here came down the temple as well. And
well, it came down 70 years later, but even...
No. It came down within a generation, less than 40 years later, because Jesus was approximately 30, 33
yes,
years
that's
old.
True.
So
yeah,
with
70 AD.
So within a generation... The whole thing, because remember, ladies and gentlemen, the apostles, these wonderful men that we credit with writing the inspired Word of God, and there's no contradictions in the New Testament writings, which is a bunch of garbage, they were offering animal sacrifices still. They hadn't even stopped offering animal sacrifices. Even those animal sacrifices were null and void because, as Michael said, the blood had been shed at Golgotha. 1-800-436-3260, and we have our good buddy John Adair from Houston, Texas, online. Hey, John.
Hey, Johnny.
Good evening, guys. I promised Mike I would return his call as I left the office for home, and I'm doing that now. But I knew it better be safe and just call the radio program and not his phone this time.
Well, let me tell you what a good pastor I have. Is that okay? This morning, I was at home waiting on the cable guy, and I called my pastor and told him that I was hungry and asked him if he would go through Sonic and pick me up some breakfast and bring it to me on his way to the office. And just like a good little boy, he ran by Sonic and picked it up and brought my sandwich to me.
What is it with Sonic with you guys? I mean, is that like,
I don't know.
Is that like the anointed meal or something?
I told
it's
John's
a mainstay
daughter
here
morning.
In Houston for those that are on the run.
John's daughter is now actually doing my CDs for the ministry now. We really appreciate what she's doing. She's
and I've got great ordinary. News for you. We have two people now on your CDs.
Ooh, isn't that amazing? I'm just getting people from everywhere now.
Right, you get Sonic delivered to you. You got CDs and DVDs being duplicated.
We have been so busy lately that I've just got to, there's some great news I want to share with you all, which is why I called, but also to let you know that we've been so busy fielding anywhere between 200 and 300 emails a day, and then 50 to 100 phone calls a day that have been coming in, just business, ministry, everything just happening at once. It's been phenomenal to watch and great to be part of. The great news was, I wish you all could have been there on Saturday night, because Michael preached with such a passion that I forgot that Michael hasn't been there for 10 years. For 10 years, I have not heard him preach like he did. Now, we've all heard Michael in the last 10 years teach, but when was the last time you heard him preach? And there is a difference. And he preached Saturday night with such life and fervency and passion from the depths of his heart that it was like I couldn't contain myself from laughing with such joy, as he can attest to you that he's looking at me like, what are you laughing at? And I'm just watching this beautiful heart of a soul blossom before my eyes once again and had forgotten what passion he used to preach with.
Oh, yeah, he can preach it, can he?
Oh, my gosh.
Were you Michael, like, were you hooping it, too? Were
you, you know what? I was able to keep my breath anyway. But, yeah, it really was a very sweet moment.
How did it feel, Michael?
Well, it felt wonderful. You know, there's so much life coming back, even on tonight's program, as people can tell, I'm sure. You know, there really is a new freedom and a new grace for what we are doing now, you know, and it's just very life-giving. It's not only a message of life, but it is now being given with life and in a very powerful way.
Did you guys record that, John?
We did not record it. I regret to tell you we did not record it. However, I know that this is something that is going to be mainstay with Michael. He'll not lose sight of this ever again because he is connected in a way with freedom now that used to come naturally for him but was perverted by religious dogma that was placed on him, that he's had to lay aside all these things. You know, Michael, I think, when was the last time, other than 2 weeks ago, that you went to a water baptism?
Oh, my goodness. A long time. We're measuring
and
decades
2 weeks
now.
Ago, Michael sat there with the biggest smile on his face, watching me baptize this guy in a swimming pool, and realizing we had the conversation months beforehand about it, about water baptism, and he says, well, why do you do it? I says, it's celebration. It's celebratory. It's between that person and their maker. It's a joyous occasion. It's like communion. It's not getting something. It's celebrating what has taken place. And
yeah,
what we've
really
done is we've taken these times of celebration and turned them over to religion, who's trying to get something out of it, when we can be celebrating using these things for what's been given out of it. It's
absolutely
what's been given.
Yeah, it's just another way to reveal the gospel. You know, what we have in our home, we still celebrate the Passover. It's a great celebration, and it's a great time of teaching and a tremendous demonstration of the gospel of grace and peace. We use the imagery of the Exodus, just like the Passover is, to talk about the freedom from the bondage of the slavery of religion, from the slavery of legalism, from the slavery of sin, from the condition that separated us from God. We're no longer in Egypt. Come on in, folks. The water's very good. It's very nice.
Right.
So you've been busy. So you've been busy, John, with all kinds of stuff, and the Champions of Grace has been going like gangbusters, I understand.
Like rock stars.
It really has. Now, I want to tell the people that have been writing in with emails and calling in and are waiting on material and different things from us, please be patient with us, because we are inundated right now, and it's a good problem to have. We're not complaining by any means, but at the same time, we're still having to set up the structure and the system by which everything can flow freely and easily. And in the midst of all this, my right-hand assistant, my right and left arm, Megan, who was supposed to be having a baby in December, decided that she wanted to have it last weekend. And it has really put a glitch in things, and we're real happy that everything's turning out fine for her, and hope she can put that child up for adoption quick and get back. No, not at all. No.
Oh, my goodness, she's going to be after you.
No, we wish her the best, of course, but it has set us back a little bit in what we need to do, and it's not a hurdle we're not going to jump over. There's no obstacle we're not going to get through it. It's going to be fine, but I am a little slower these days, and as things are picking up, my help has gotten less. But today, you know, redemption came through, and my daughter's jumping in, and Lauren is now going to be jumping in, and Anne is going to be coming on next week. So, yes, we're getting more help. And, Michael, I don't know, I haven't been able to listen to the broadcasts in the last few weeks. I don't know, have you told the people the favor that we're experiencing, the grace
no,
we're experiencing between?
No, I haven't really had time to.
You know, a few months ago, we just kind of felt this favor between men creeping in. Yes.
John, let me jump in just a second. This phone, I'm not used to using this phone. If I go off, it's not because somebody pissed me off and I hung up, okay?
Yeah, okay, James. So,
be quiet.
We have a lot of fun, Michael and I, throughout the day and the week with each other.
Because my pastor is evil.
We sensed just a few months ago that there was a growing momentum of favor with our brothers and sisters in this world.
Oh, we did talk about that, didn't we, Glenn?
Yeah, we sure did.
You talked about that?
Yeah.
And we are seeing that flourish. Now, you always, always have favor with God. Always. You can't earn that. You can't shut it off. You always have that. But, you know, that favor is a dispensation between men. There is a time of favor in this world between each other that it seems to dissipate sometimes and stronger at others. And we're in one of those periods that I really think we're embarking on something that everything we seem to be touching right now is just working.
It is.
You know, and it's just, it's working. Things are getting fixed. Things are being ironed out. Doors are opening up. People are welcoming and accepting. And it is exciting to be part of and to witness and to serve and give into. This is, you know, if we had to go through what we've been through for the last 15 years and do it all over again for what we are now beginning to experience, it would be worth it tenfold.
Absolutely. And aren't you glad, John, that we're not waiting on the end of the world?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. If you haven't heard, you know, Michael, I had to call Michael the other day, and I said, where is that Golgotha secret CD, the master that we had, so that the girls can get a copy? Where is that? He said, well, I don't know. I said, did you take it off my desk? He says, no. Well, I can't find it. And then in the mid-sentence, I had to stop him and say, oh, oops, I'm sorry. I have the master here in my car. I've been listening to it. I forgot the name of the series or the name of the CD that I had, and it was the master for that particular one. But as
and
I
that's why
listened to that,
ladies and gentlemen.
So, because I was shuffling it back and forth to home to try to get it edited right so that people had a nice copy when they got it. But you are going to enjoy that CD. That message in there, just to give you a taste, there's this one line in there, a verse that Michael is quoting from. I believe it was Matthew 24, where he's talking about the wars and the rumors of wars and the earthquakes and the famines and pestilence places and all these things that the prophetic Bible scholars use to prove the end of the world is coming. But in there it says that these signs shall be and these things shall come, but the end is not yet. This is not the end. And yet it's all those things that the prophetic, so-called prophetic teachers tell you are the signs to the end. But right there it says,
this is not a sign.
This is not a sign to the end. Now, just so, if you just got the CD for that one thing, it's like, oh my gosh, how plain could that be? And we allow, again, the dogmas and doctrines of men to steer us away from the completed work, to focus our eyes on something to come when we've already got it.
Amen, brother.
Yeah. How are you, Glenn?
I am doing wonderfully. Thank you for caring enough to ask.
I'm so glad to know that you're back in Florida.
Yeah, it's good to be back here and back in the saddle. And, of course, it was rainy and horrible in Wisconsin when I was there for 3 weeks, and I got home and just started raining all over again. And I think that is a sign of God's favor, because it's the latter rain, you see, John?
Yeah.
We're under the anointing of the Holy Ghost. Okay. Yeah, I could start preaching right now.
Yes, we are, actually.
All right, well, listen, thanks a lot, and we'll continue to direct people to the Champions of Grace and keep them updated with that. And
ChampionsOfGrace.com.
A lot of
exciting things happening.
And can you bring,
tell them about being down Corpus Christi, Michael?
Yeah, John, you've got to listen. We've talked about that already.
Okay,
we talked
right.
about Corpus Christi. We talked about, you know, we talked about everything. No, we did talk about Corpus Christi and about the event you guys are going to. You're going to be sharing there, huh, Johnny?
That's what I'm told.
That
was a surprise to me, but
make sure that thing's recorded because we want to hear that one for sure.
Okay.
All right, man. Hey, I'm kind of hungry right now. Can you get me some Sonics, please?
You got it.
Thank you. Just the next day it or something.
John, you know which sandwiches, right?
John Adair, ladies and gentlemen, from the Freedom Worship Center.
Love you guys.
Love you, John.
Love you too, John.
Bye.
Bye. There he is, John Adair.
There he is.
You guys must be having some fun down there, it sounds like.
Yeah.
And we got some big news coming, folks, Houston, Texas way. So we're going to be having the Gospel Revolution Convocation, which has been in the offing for many years, and that's going to come to pass here next year relatively soon. So stay tuned for information about that.
Yes.
So also, you folks that emailed us and have questions and comments that have not been addressed tonight, we will get to those next week. And I've been under high-level negotiations during this webcast, Michael, because Patrick L. Jones, our executive engineer and producer, wants to participate in Halloween next Wednesday night, our regular webcast night, with his daughter. I try to convince Patrick that thing is of the occult, that it's pagan, that it's of the devil, but he will not hear it because Jaden wants candy. And
That's right. So
he has agreed to do the webcast Tuesday night instead. So we will have a special Halloween edition of Black Light Online.
Non-Halloween edition.
What's the day before Halloween? That's called,
All Hallows Eve.
Isn't it All Saints Day or something? Well, we'll find out next week because we know
it's something.
It's right in line with all the other pagan holidays like Christmas and Easter, and we want you to enjoy it to the fullest. As John was talking about being able to enjoy baptism, you can enjoy everything, ladies and gentlemen. And you do it in the right frame of mind, knowing that you have been redeemed and that God sees you as righteous and perfect in His sight no matter what. Even if you participate in a water baptism, Michael.
That's right.
even if you preach versus teaching.
It doesn't make a difference.
It's a beautiful thing. We got a lot of questions to get to for next week. So as I said, folks, and I had mentioned we just heard tonight for the first time from Jim in Flint, Michigan, and Jim will get to your comments and questions next week as well as all the other ones. And in the meantime, go to the gospelrevolution.com website. Check out the Champions of Grace. Just click on there. It's very self-explanatory. You have an opportunity to be credentialed through Champions of Grace. Just click on there. It's all on the gospelrevolution.com website, as well as the information about the meetings in Calgary and Central Wisconsin and Marshfield coming up in November. Things are happening, Michael.
Yes, they are. We've waited, and I think our time is now.
It's been seemingly a long time coming, but we're enjoying ourselves, and we hope you folks are too. Tonight's the first night of the World Series, Michael. Do you know that?
I have no clue.
Yeah, and you don't know. You don't even know who's in the World Series, do you?
I have no clue.
Yeah, you don't care. I
really don't care.
Yeah, well, another sign that you are clearly a heretic. I mean, what kind of American doesn't know that the World Series has started tonight? A very good American. A fine American, if you are.
Yes.
All right, so you're going to Corpus Christi this weekend or next weekend?
Let's see. It's the first weekend in November, whatever that is.
Oh, so it'll be next weekend, not this weekend.
Yes.
Okay, we'll have a full report about that. And we will wait to hear from you folks next time. We're going to do it Tuesday night, the 30th of October. And for those folks who are used to hearing it on Wednesday night, that will be archived by then. Michael, thank you so much. It was it went by quick, as it always does.
Yes, it absolutely was. Thank you so much, Glenn. We appreciate you and all of the folks that have been listening in, either live or archived. Thank you so much for participating with your emails and even just listening. I don't know how many of the folks I talked to in Canada that we never hear from, but man, I was calling people about the conference, and how many of them said, "Oh yes, we heard online. We listened to the program." And it was people I had no clue were listening in. So,
well, Patrick,
thanks, guys.
Patrick's server has 60 websites on it, and he said that our website has more hits on it than all the other websites combined. And we know that because of the gospel revolution penetrating and permeating the four corners of the planet via the modern miracle of the World Wide Web. So that's a beautiful
thing.
It's a beautiful thing. All right, we will talk to you guys next week. And in the meantime, feel free to be in touch with us at webcast@gospelrevolution.com. Thanks again to Patrick Jones, for John Adair, and, of course, Michael Williams. This is Glenn Klein online saying, Shalom, everybody.